Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Monash. This is the weekend edition where we interview notable people from the world of real estate investing. Today is no exception. We have a great guest all the way from Orlando, Florida. Welcome to the show, Derek Vickers.
Thanks, Victor, for having me. Excited to be on.
Great to have you here. Now, Derek, you come from the world of mobile home park investing. I'm really excited to have this conversation because we haven't talked about this on the show in quite some time. But before we do, maybe give a little bit of your backstory and how you got to this point in your journey.
Yeah, so I was in the insurance business for 9 years. And I built up, it started for me, just myself, built up a team of 100 salespeople. And then COVID happened and our sales dropped tremendously. I'd always wanted to get into real estate. And so I was looking for an asset class. I'd been underwriting some multifamily deals. And then I started finding information about mobile home parks and just the fundamentals, the basic fundamentals of the asset class really caught my attention. And so I just did what I do best. And I started cold calling, you know, mom and pop owners here in the area and started driving to parks and close the first deal. Started looking in, I guess it was April of 2020, closed the first deal in September of 2020. And then in 2021, we were just off to the races. So I think we closed 17 deals in 2021. And yeah, we just haven't looked back then. This year's been, a little crazy, but we're still, getting some deals under contract and working through it. But that's how I got started. That's the short, really Reader's Digest version of it.
Fantastic. And so you're primarily concentrated in Florida and some of the neighboring states?
Yeah, so it's mainly in Florida, and then we have some stuff in North and South Carolina as well.
Fantastic. And what drew you to that asset class? I mean, apart from the usual, you're just renting dirt and so on. Now, we'll get into the details, but what drew you to that asset class?
Well, one of the things, Victor, was that the barrier to entry was lower. So the first deal that we bought, it was a 22-unit deal for $425,000. So it was like 20-some thousand a unit, which, in the areas that I was looking in Orlando and Tampa, multifamily is, $150,000 plus a door. And I didn't just want to buy a duplex. So I wanted to get some scale initially. And this was like, okay, I can actually already skip to 22 units in one deal because I think $400,000 maybe would have gotten me 2 units in Orlando. So that was that. And obviously, renting the dirt and not the home was one, but also the supply and demand factor of the asset class. Like, you can't build these things in good locations. The municipalities just won't let you do it. And so I love that, because the supply is decreasing every year and the demand for affordable housing, as we all know in this industry, is just, it's tremendous and there's a massive shortage of it. And in the markets that I'm in, Central Florida particularly, there's a ton of mobile home parks here and in the state of Florida. Those were the things that drew me to it. And also one more thing from Victor was, like, it was a very fragmented business, a lot of mom and pop owners, not a lot of institutional operators. So I knew there was some opportunity to go in and get some seller financing terms and pick up some deals at a good price.
Now, one of the things that I've always believed when it comes to real estate, and I don't care what the tax authority says, there's nothing passive about owning real estate. It is an active business, especially a mobile home park.
Yep.
What is the break point where below a certain number of units, it simply doesn't make sense from an operational perspective because the overheads are too high on a per pad basis?
Yeah. Are you talking about from like a, managing yourself kind of basis, or?
Managing yourself or even hiring the staff needed to manage. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, the asset needs to be managed. So
correct.
Unless you can aggregate 3 or 4 parks together that are geographically somewhat co-located in the same area within driving distance, you're going to be needing to amortize the cost of operating that park across a certain number of units.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a great point. So the first deal that we bought, and this will lead into the answer to your question, I managed that one myself. And then we bought another one probably 30 minutes down the street. I managed that myself. And then it was about 2 weeks later, we closed 3 more in Tampa. And so that put us at almost 200 units. And so I had to hire someone else to run the properties in Tampa. And that actually, this structure actually worked. We had a couple office employees and that was fine until we got to about 500 units, because then we made one acquisition that took us to 1,000 units and everything broke. And then we had to redo the system. We had to put more regional managers in place. And so you know, and we were buying value add properties, so we needed more boots on the ground. But if you're buying a, you know, 200 lots of all tenant owned home parks, if they're, you know, geographically condensed, then you could probably run that with one manager. We have one regional manager in Tampa now that that does 400 units by herself. And the properties are mainly in Tampa and St. Pete, but that's because they're all tenant owned homes and there's like, it just sits there. There's not a lot of work, but if you're buying value add, you're going to need more boots on the ground.
Now, many parks, they come sometimes just the dirt. In other cases, they come with dirt with some percentage of park owned homes because maybe somebody left and didn't pay and the home was just left on the lot and it was more expensive to get rid of it than to just fix it up and rent it out again. What's your model? How do you deal with the ownership of homes? As I'm sure you have some in your portfolio, or do you simply try and divest of those?
Yeah, great question. And so I actually look to buy parks with park-owned units. I want to buy all park-owned units because then I'm going to convert them to tenant-owned units. And that's what we did. I think we're probably, maybe we have 3% park-owned homes now, but by the end of the next 60 days, we won't have any. And the reason why I like that is because, you know, lot rents at mobile home parks are artificially low. So if I go in and the park owned home rent is $1,200, I can go in and essentially we would sell a $20,000 home for $5,000 to someone that passed the background check. But then I would be able to say, hey, you own the home now. You know, you're in the middle of Tampa, your lot rent's now $700. And, you know, we got rid of those homes. And also we would, you know, go in and pave the roads and fix up the park. And then this would drastically improve the value of the park quickly. So I don't like having park-owned homes. I like getting rid of them.
Fascinating. And are you doing that just straight as a transaction? Or are you doing more of a rent-to-own program as some parks do?
Well, no, we don't do rent-to-own. I mean, you know, it's interesting because in the markets that we're in, these really strong A markets, like people will pay, you know, they just pay for these things. Like they have, they pay us outright. There's some that we've done, you know, sort of a rent credit, rent to own kind of program with, but very few. Most people, if they say, if we're like, hey, $5,000 for the house, boom, they'll come in and pay for it. And even some people, surprisingly, we've paid $20,000 and $30,000 for some really nice homes that we've had.
Fascinating. Now, when you're performing due diligence on a park, dirt is dirt. The question is, and you can look at some of the history of the comps and so on and what the market is commanding, but there's a lot of infrastructure that's buried in the ground that is arguably of unknown quality, whether it is water pipes that might be near end of life, whether it's maybe sewer infrastructure that's near end of life. How do you perform that due diligence?
Well, it's not easy sometimes because, you know, so for example, a park we bought in Tampa, there was like septic tanks, you know, under homes and like there's, it's just a mess. And so you got to do as best you can. If there's 40 septic tanks in there, you can't go and pump them all out. Wow. Right. And have them all inspected. You know, you can do a few of them and you can kind of get a good idea, but it's not easy. And, you know, a lot of these parks were developed in the 50s and 60s. And the infrastructure is old, like you mentioned. And so you do the best you can. You get a plumber to come out and check the water lines. And a lot of times it's a mix of, you know, cast iron pipes. It could be clay pipes. And there's some PVC mixed in there. And the best way to handle that is obviously inspecting as best as you can up front. But, you know, allocating costs for CapEx. If you know that you have a bad septic system, you need to bring that money and raise that money from your investors up front because you know it's going to happen at some point. And so there's really, you know, there's no panacea for like, hey, do this and due diligence and you'll never miss anything. It's you know, can be difficult with these assets, with the old infrastructure, but standard, call a septic company, call a plumbing company, get them to come out and inspect it. You can camera the lines, you can do that, but there still may be some things that you miss in due diligence. So one of the things that we missed is that we were buying some of these parks that were 50% vacant. We didn't take into account that we were like, okay, yeah, it's city water and city sewer. It should be fine. But that was when it was 50% vacant. When it was 100% full and we filled it up, we had tons of problems with sewer backups, water pipe breaks. And so, you know, a mistake made was not accounting for the, you know, the extra people that would actually be living in the park at that time.
So some of those vacant sites were probably not functional and you just didn't know.
They were functional. They just, there hadn't been anyone living there for years. So some of them, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, these homes were just sitting there.
Mm.
And so there was, you know, a lot of buildup and just backup, and it was just a mess for a bit.
Now that you have a few years of experience going into this business, how has your strategy shifted? What are you looking for now? And is it different from what you started with?
Yeah, it's definitely changed because it's, you know, those value add deals can be a little soul sucking at times. They can, you know, hit you where it hurts, and you know, you may not want to do those anymore. So I'm actually looking for more, you know, more stabilized and more properties that are already, you know, that aren't as heavy and deep value add as we were doing. Because although the upside is there, they can take your attention off, you know, many other things. You buy one heavy value add deal when you could buy, you know, five that don't need near as much work. Well, you know, the same value, if not more, is generated. So we're still looking in great, like, I never want to compromise location. I don't like buying in rural areas. I like to be within 45 minutes of a major MSA. Again, I want to buy more nice stuff with, you know, maybe even some more. So, for example, two parks that we just put under contract, they're all tenant-owned homes. There's no park-owned homes. They're in great locations, and they're just going to sit there. I mean, they're pretty nice. There's not going to require much work. And so I think I would rather buy more of those moving forward than the deep value add stuff, because my hair, you know, if I don't keep it cut, it's gets a little gray on the sides. And I think it's attributed to some of those deals that we did in the past couple of years.
Yeah, understood. One of the strategies that many park owners undertake is to become dealers for some of the manufacturers of these manufactured homes, whether it's Clayton or anyone else. Have you looked at importing new product into the parks and acting as a dealer for some of the new product?
No, we haven't really done that, because out of all the parks that we've had, we've never had, you know, somebody actually call and say, hey, we're going to bring your house in. Because so just to kind of give you and your audience some insight here. So if we buy most of the parks in great locations in Florida, they're very small lots. A lot of the new homes won't fit there. And we have just found that it's easier for us to take what's existing and convert that than to bring in a new home. Like, we have brought in some used homes and in various parks, but we haven't really ventured down that path yet. And maybe we will, but it's not something that we've done currently.
Fascinating. Well, Derek, if folks want to connect, if they want to learn more, what's the best way?
Yeah. So if you go to, I'm on all social media platforms, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. I post daily about mobile home park content. So you can find me there at Derek Vickers 885 on all those platforms. And then also I have my webinar that I did. It's a recorded webinar you can go check out. If you go to go.parkinvestingpro.com, that's go.parkinvestingpro.com. It literally, it's a free webinar. It goes through the basic terms and definitions of mobile home park investing all the way up through, you know, underwriting and acquiring deals. So you can find me there on those. And I have my podcast, The MHP Show. I do episodes weekly with mobile home park operators and owners and other people related to the industry. So you can check that out, The MHP Show, on iTunes, Spotify, anywhere you can find a podcast. I'm there.
Fantastic. Well, Derek, love the perspective, love what you're doing. And for the listeners at home, definitely connect with Derek Vickers at Derek Vickers 885 on all the different social media platforms. And check out his webinar at go.parkinvestingpro.com. The links will be in the show notes. And in the meantime, have an awesome rest of your weekend. Go make some great things happen. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow.